Welcome into the Fan pregame on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590. The Fan. I'm going to have two guests this evening. John Morosi in a few moments. Got a set for Jay starting a series against the Yankees in the Bronx. And then Jack Michaels at 6:30 to get you set for game three as Edmonton returns home down 0-2 in their series against LA Kings. That's a 10 p.m. puck drop on Sportsnet.
Yeah, big time games on the network tonight. But I would argue, I'd reckon, none bigger than the Oilers and the Kings. Oilers looking to avoid that 3-0 series hole. We've seen two teams, clearly, in the Stanley Cup final last year, start their playoffs. It's gone decidedly better for the Florida Panthers.
Yes.
Edmonton's going to have to put its foot in the ground tonight. So we'll see if Jack Michaels believes they can do just that.
Okay, let's kick things off with a little Blue Jays baseball. John Morosi of MLB Network joins us. John, appreciate you coming on. It's been a little while since we chatted. How's it going?
Yes, Ailish and Justin, I'm doing great. Great to be with you. I know it's been a little bit of a tough five-game stretch for the Jays, but still a lot of baseball to be played.
Yeah, I think the vibes have shifted dramatically. Good thing the Blue Jays aren't our main focus all the time here. Maple Leafs, of course, as you know, doing really well. So we are going to get back into a little Blue Jays chat with you here. And I guess with the vibes being low, I want to start with some of the offensive issues that they're having. They just played that series against Houston. I think they went 9-90 at the plate with like, so a 100 batting average, not great in three games in Houston, and now a five-game losing streak. You know, these things happen. You go through ups and downs. But what would the message be if you're trying to get things back on track, if you're the Blue Jays staff and trying to reinvigorate a little offense?
Well, first of all, Ailish, fortunately for the Jays, the Leafs have two full months of hockey left.
Yeah, there you go.
For them to figure it out at the baseball diamond. So we're going to keep the faith in that regard. So as for the Jays offensively, I think we need to see some more thorough at-bats. And that may sound like a bit of a vague notion, but I just think we're seeing too many, for lack of a better description, easy and quick outs. Mm. And that has to change. I think there are varied reasons for that to be the case right now, up and down the lineup. Interestingly enough, the one guy who seems to be taking much more thorough and longer at-bats now than he was a year ago, George Springer, is off to a phenomenal start, really going well above what the expectations were for him. But I think you drill down on some of the key guys. You've got Bo and Vlad combining for 200 at-bats, actually more than that, and one home run. Mm. It's really hard to win when that's the output of your two most formidable bats in a lot of different ways. And I think Santander, you could understand, first year in a new place, this happens to some hitters. Jimenez was on fire to begin the year. He's cooled off a bit since then. You're just not seeing enough of, I think, a top-to-bottom approach to where I do think getting a bit deeper into counts would be helpful. It's important to note, yes, they faced what is a good team in Houston, but it's not what I would describe as a dominant pitching staff. And so that last series, I wasn't really alarmed until those last few games. It said to me, Maybe there's something flawed in this lineup that we weren't picking up on in the early days of the season.
Yeah, I guess you could look at the Mariners series last week and think, okay, there's some quality pitching there, and it's going to come. But then you do even worse, and it's even more anemic against the Astros. And clearly, you know, we're asking questions right now of the Blue Jays offense. I guess it could go back to summer process. I mean, okay, there's a clear need for a cleanup hitter. There's been a clear need for a cleanup hitter, and I know Anthony Santander hasn't been cleaning up in the order, but he's the guy who's supposed to protect Vlad and hit the ball out of the ballpark. But I look at the Yankees, who went out and got Cody Bellinger and Paul Goldschmidt. And Cody Bellinger has not had a particularly good season, but Paul Goldschmidt's almost hitting .400. It's like, you know, they're not leaving themselves much room for error, that being the Blue Jays. You go out and get that one bat, but if something else falls, then you're still searching for the offense, whereas the Yankees, you know, spray the board a little bit more, and they can survive Cody Bellinger having a pretty weak start to the season.
You're right, and I think the two words there that stand out with the Yankees, Aaron Judge. He erases a lot of your shortcomings. And again, if Vlad's production to this point was more in line of what Aaron Judge has done with the Yankees at this point, the Jays' conversation is very different. To your point, it's not just Aaron Judge. Ben Rice has been off to a really strong start. Goldschmidt certainly has been a really nice addition for the New York Yankees. It's not a perfect team in New York. It's really not. They've got, I do think, a number of shortcomings. Trent Grisham, though, has bounced back. And Grisham is having the type of year that a healthy Dalton Varsho might be able to have for the Jays. So the thing about Judge is he just does it so consistently. And it's amazing to think about, and I go back to that record-setting season. You think about all the great Yankees who've ever played the game, all of them who we see in the black and white highlights, Babe Ruth, Lou Gehrig, Mickey Mantle, Joe DiMaggio. None of them, including Maris, have ever hit 62 homers in 1 year, and Aaron Judge has. I think there's this bias toward looking back in the past and saying, well, these were the greatest of all time. Aaron Judge is one of the greatest of all time, and he's being paid like one of the greatest of all time, and he's producing that way, and he has stood up to that contract every day that he's had it, and even every day before he got it, which is why he is so impressive on the brightest of bright stages in baseball. You can bat him anywhere. And the other thing, too, Justin and Ailish, is that he was playing a lot of center field for them in the past, which was a great team-first approach that I think has really set a positive tone from the Yankees captain for the rest of the club.
Yeah, Aaron Judge with a batting average over 400 and already a month into the season. Like, tonight, and he's against Jose Berríos, who he's traditionally been really good against. I was trying to find a silver lining. Like, Blue Jays, they're going against Carlos Carrasco tonight. I think his ERA is almost up at 7. So is this... Okay, can we get a little offense tonight? Can the Blue Jays find a home run? They got the worst home run differential in the MLB. I think they're out a home run 33-13. And just start feeling good about themselves. Pitching matchup maybe helps both teams, but I'm hoping the Blue Jays find something good in the Bronx tonight.
Should be the right matchup, right ballpark. Mm-hmm. And if you're ever going to get well, this is the time and place to do it. And I do think, you know, certainly all of us that work in TV and in media, we do sometimes love to play up the superstars. It's a fun story. Well, yep. You've got Judge, you got Vlad. Let's see who has the better series. Mm-hmm. And there's no doubt about it that if Vladdy comes in this week and hits two homers and knocks in 7 or 8 runs, it's just a very different vibe for this team. It's going to be hard for this team to win games unless he plays like an all-star over the big sweep of the season in terms of Vladdy. But you're right. It is the right matchup, right ballpark, right everything. And interestingly, Carlos Carrasco was one of my favorite people to talk to in the game. He's lived so many different lives in the game. He's a world traveler. I think he's been to like 25 countries. He went to the World Cup when it was in the wintertime. He loves soccer. His wife's Italian. There's a lot of different storylines where he travels the world. So, but with Carlos Carrasco, he's been in the league for so long that Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins were part of the organization in Cleveland when they got him in the deal from the Phillies for Cliff Lee. That's back in 2009. There's some history there then with Mark Shapiro, Ross Atkins, and the current Jays front office to Cookie Carrasco, as he's known all those years ago as a young prospect in the Phillies organization.
Yeah, we might need the brass down in the dugout tonight giving some tips if they know some of the weaknesses for the 38-year-old hurler with the Yankees. The Yankees staff, I mean, Carlos Carrasco at this point doesn't exactly scream playoff starter, but the Yankees, despite the injury to Gerrit Cole and things not necessarily going as planned to start the season from a starting pitching rotation, they're hanging in there. I mean, the Yankees, it feels like a slightly diminished version. You lose Juan Soto, hard not to be diminished, and they're obviously dealing with problems with their pitching staff from an injury standpoint, but it feels like they're making do so far this season, John.
They are, and even with their bullpen too, Devin Williams came in and was certainly a much celebrated acquisition, and he's had some bumps along the road as he's gotten used to the role that Mariano Rivera once had at the end of the game for the New York Yankees. But you're right, I think it's a bit more of a reliance on someone like a Carlos Rodon, who has to be now the stabilizer in this organization, in the rotation. Certainly has been, Stroman has had some opportunities. He struggled a bit, obviously, before landing on the IL. So I do think that the Yankees are among the teams who will be looking to add pitching help at the deadline. There's a lot of them, certainly, who will need help. The Jays, I think they've managed quite well, all things considered, especially given in the light of Scherzer's injury. I think they've managed the pitching side of things pretty well when you consider that you're without one of the guys that you're really depending on in Scherzer. But that's why I think those teams that really have excellent starting pitching right now with the way that Kodai Senga has bounced back for the Mets, that really stands out. Objectively, again, I know it's late April, but the Mets right now are a better team than the Yankees. They are, top to bottom. They're just better and more complete. The pitching is healthier. They've got Lindor and Soto and Alonso, who they're all, I think, off to pretty solid starts. In the case of Alonso, a phenomenal start. So I think for a lot of different reasons, and Yankee fans will not want to hear this, but the Mets may well have the best roster in New York right now. And I think that the results right now show it. And to your earlier point, Justin, on this, with the way the Yankee roster looks in comparison to last year, You think about their success in the postseason. There was a lot of Cole, a lot of Stanton, and a lot of Soto. And none of those three are on the team right now.
Yeah, you mentioned the Mets with an 18-7 record, the best win percentage in the entire MLB. I want to ask you just about the American League. We'll just focus on this one this time. A team that's either impressed you or really disappointed you. I know it's only been about a month of baseball across those three, AL East, AL Central, AL West, the team that you got your eyes on.
Well, I'll answer, Ailish, both sides of that question with the series happening in Detroit this weekend. The Tigers on the positive side and the Orioles on the negative side. Let's start with Baltimore. We talked a lot, and I know it's easy for us in the media and the fans to say, hey, you should really go for it. Trade those prospects. Go for it now. Well, I'm here to say the Orioles probably should have went for it. When they had the chance to do so, now they look a little bit older. Maybe some of their prospects aren't quite as good as they thought they were going to be. And you start to wonder, did they miss their window? As great as they looked on opening day at Rogers Center, they haven't really been that good since then. And so you do start to wonder, have they missed their window by being a bit too conservative with their own prospects? They probably should have traded for Tarek Skubal last year. They didn't. Skubal helps the Tigers get to the playoffs. And now, and you know, again, they're the team in my hometown. I watch them pretty carefully. They're better than I thought they were going to be. Their pitching is excellent. Jackson Jobe looks like he's going to be a Rookie of the Year candidate. Skubal is still Skubal. They signed Jack Flaherty back. They added to their bullpen. Spencer Torkelson looks like an all-star all of a sudden. He made some adjustments in the offseason. They now have a healthy Gleyber Torres back. In a very winnable division, the Tigers have an excellent chance to get there. Their pitching is really good. They have a great pitching coach as well. And Chris Fetter. So, unfortunately, Ailish and Justin, we don't have the Jays and the Tigers in the same division anymore. We don't have those great pennant races like in 87. But I do think that we will see, I think, playoff baseball again in Detroit later on this year.
John, incredible parity in the American League. I know we, you know, I think the biggest story really of the lead into the season was how all the talent seemed to be concentrating or at least heading towards the National League. You look at the standings now, with the exception of the White Sox, which, duh, like every team seems to be within 4.5 games of first place in their division. I know it's early, it's hard to fall that far out, but everyone's just sniffing around 500. Is there an elite team in the American League? Will one emerge, or is this going to be fodder for whoever comes out of the National League in the World Series this year?
That's a great question, Justin. I think the answer right now is no. I do not see an elite team in the American League right now. There are teams that have the potential to be elite. I think if Boston gets their rotation healthy, we'll see Giolito getting closer. They're a team that could be elite. Christian Campbell is an amazing talent. I'm part of the fan club for him. He's great. I think in general that Red Sox lineup has some serious potential. Bregman, Devers, when they all get lined up, they're going to be really good. Seattle, as you saw with the Jays series, elite pitching. And if they get just enough offense, if Julio Rodriguez gets going, and that's been the big question for them going back to last year, they could be an absolute nightmare in the postseason. The Rangers have bounced back a little bit, but again, none of these teams to me are scary, I guess is the word. I don't see a scary team. What is scary in the National League right now, this is the wild part about it, depending on which playoff odds you're looking at and calculating, I checked Baseball Reference this week, and they had the Dodgers postseason odds somewhere under 70%.
Yeah.
What? Now, they've got flaws, but it would be a fairly monumental surprise in the history of baseball if the Dodgers don't make the playoffs. And yet, the stat that I mentioned earlier today that I think is just really telling about the Dodgers, they have not had a single starting pitcher on regular rest, which we describe as 4 days rest, five-man rotation. Zero starts on regular rest. And a lot of that's because they want to get Yamamoto and Sasaki extra days coming over from Japan because of the different schedule. But Glasnow also has been someone that's had injury issues in the past, as has Snell, who's now on the IL, as has May, who lost a game this week. Their rotation, they all of a sudden, it's not like Kershaw is a luxury and even Ohtani's a luxury. They need these guys. And they are in, I'm not going to say panic, because no one's going to feel sorry for the Dodgers. Let's be clear about that. But they are not nearly as dominant or inevitable as we thought they were a month ago. The Giants are better. The Padres are better. And the Dodgers are a little more normal than we thought they were going to be. And that's why the magic and the mystery of a baseball season is so much fun to watch unfold over 6 months.
Well, if Baseball Reference is giving the Dodgers around like a 70% chance, what do you give the Maple Leafs at, you know, advancing past this round, maybe the next one, maybe a conference final?
I'm feeling good. I am. And listen, I understand that there are memories in the memory banks, but let me tell you this. I love the way they played. When you're getting goals in overtime from Domi and yep. Benoit, good sign. Marner, I could watch that pass he made to Austin mm-hmm. in front over and over again. The thing I'm seeing, though, 34, playing a great 200-foot game, love that about it. And also you think about Florida. If they get past Tampa, this Barkov injury certainly is concerning. That's a lot of hockey they've played the last 2 years. I just from this side of the border, I'm saying this. Things are lining up pretty nicely for the blue and white. Nice. That's what I'm seeing.
Well, gladly take that, John. Appreciate your support of our teams. We'll chat with you soon. We appreciate you coming on. Enjoy your weekend.
All the best. Have a great weekend.
Thanks so much. That's John Morosi of MLB Network ahead of Jays Yankees, a series in the Bronx, and a pretty important one for the Blue Jays as they have slipped. We had a really hot start. We're feeling good about them. They're now third in the AL East behind the Red Sox and the Yankees.
Yep, they've dropped five in a row, conceded 31 runs in those five losses. And
how many did they score?
That's not enough. Not many. That's a complete tour through the rotation, right? So the last tour through the rotation, pretty bad for the Toronto Blue Jays, giving up a lot. But it'll begin again with Jose Berríos, as you mentioned, tonight against Carlos Carrasco. As we mentioned earlier, he's 2-1 on the season. That ERA a little bit bloated. Berríos, though, he's been really hittable as well. 28 hits allowed in 28 and two-thirds innings. Six homers allowed, 16 earned runs in those 28 and two-thirds innings. It's a tough assignment, of course, against Aaron Judge, who is, like, otherworldly. Like, he is from a different planet, this yes. guy. 4.15 batting average this season. Just give him the MVP already.
And his stats against Berríos are just about as good. He's got 4 home runs, 9 RBIs at 32 at-bats with a .344 average and could be teeing off tonight.
I suppose not too late to add him to our betting segment later.
I was going to do a little parlay of Judge and Vlad because I think Vlad tonight is in the Bronx.
That's the exact storyline Morosi laid out.
And I have
superstar versus superstar.
I have it ready. And I think,
one performing like one.
Yeah, one sure. that needs to wake up and perform like one.
One of two, yeah.
So it could be a good night, especially with the Carlos Carrasco of it all. Maybe tonight's a hittable night.
Don't want to disagree or step on your toes, as I just did, with John. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. You watched Florida last night?
The hockey
game? I don't know if everything's breaking perfectly for the Toronto Maple Leafs because that Florida team looks like it is still very much of the Stanley Cup caliber.
100%. It's been really shocking to me, I think, if we went through, like, surprise factors of series. I think Florida starting 2-0 against Tampa has been pretty much right up there with the shock of a lot of different things that's happened in the NHL. But they look rested. Feisty, that line with Tkachuk and Bennett and Marchand is like,
it's... See them at the end of the game, just like they're all lined up in a row, peeking at Kucherov.
They're all little,
Gensel.
Like, versions of each other.
Yeah, it's like it's like an all-star team of bullies. Not to say that they're like high school bullies.
Yeah.
But let's say you just brought like the top candidate, the top agitator from every school, and you just put them together mm-hmm. and put them on a line together, or put them in a sporting event together or in the same classroom, what that would look like. That's basically what the Florida Panthers have going on right now with those three.
Yeah, it's going to be like, it's gonna take a lot of grit from Tampa to crawl back into the series, but I would never count them out. And they're a team that both you and I thought could traditionally go pretty far in this playoff series. But they got their back up against the wall. So do most teams on the network tonight. We've got Washington, Montreal, which will be up next. And I'm really excited to see what it looks like at the Bell Center because they, after the Four Nations faceoff, they went 10-0-2 at home with a +21 goal differential. That arena was one of the main reasons that they made the playoffs. Like, they were rocking at home. They fed off the vibes. I think that they get back into it tonight, make this a 2-1 series. I'm really looking forward to seeing what we see from Montreal and Washington tonight.
Yeah, I'm wondering what we'll see from Patrick Laine. Was benched for the third period
Didn't
in the game 2
today,
loss.
Eh?
Didn't skate for maintenance reasons. That may be, and I don't know this, I'm speculating, but hey, can we avoid the pregame discussion about a decision Martin St. Louis is making to not play him in this game? I don't know that that's a fact. He also might just need the maintenance because we know he's been dealing with injuries. But can you get Patrick Laine to be a positive if you're Martin Saint-Louis? I feel like you need to because right now that team is the brilliant top line that we know led by Nick Suzuki. Mm-hmm. They've got that utility second line that's really kind of a third line but is playing second line minutes with Brendan Gallagher and Josh Anderson being key to that line. And then you've got this talent that exists in the bottom six between Demidov and Laine, and can you conjure up something within that bottom six to give you a scoring punch, but B, a chance against the heavy bully-like nature of the Washington Capitals? They got to figure something out because two lines that are working and two lines that are not is not an equation. I don't think that's going to work for Montreal in this series.
LA and Edmonton, the nightcap of this doubleheader, 10 p.m. start. And if you think that Montreal needs to show up, Edmonton is, it feels like a last chance really for them to get back into the series. I know it's only 2-0, but this is, for me, obviously must win. Like that doesn't sound too shocking, but this is where McDavid and Draisaitl, they show up and they find a way to will this team into a 2-1 series because it's Calvin Pickard and net. Vibes are really off, but you're back at home in Edmonton, and this is why you get paid the big bucks. This is why you're the best, maybe the Hart Trophy winner and the Conn Smythe from last year. Like, this is your game tonight to put this team back in the right place.
Yeah, Knobloch played the Pickard card last year, and it kind of set them straight a little bit. It got them going with Stu Skinner needing a breather. The difference is Skinner needed a breather a little later in the playoff run, not to begin the playoff run. They've got a lot of issues. Goaltending is clearly one. The defense is clearly one. Just basically anyone other than Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl up front is kind of an issue right now.
Their special teams has been brutal, too.
Like, they just don't have anything going right now. And I don't want to just say, oh, Connor and Leon, poor them because they're playing so well and no one else is. I don't actually think that's the case. Like, I think Connor and Leon, despite what we saw in the third period of Game 1, probably have a little bit more. And if you're watching on TV, you're seeing them kind of sitting together, quiet, and not happy with what's going on. And the fact that it looks like they're operating in a silo while everybody else is operating in a different silo is probably an issue here. They are not looking like a team, especially in a manner that they did last year when they just had everything going. And yeah, it was the greatness of McDavid and Draisaitl, but it was also everyone else, you know, making sure that they were in a position to do those great things. It just hasn't felt that way in Edmonton so far.
Yeah, they need to look like a fully different team tonight, only a night or two since they last played. So quick switch flip, but we know that they can do that. Okay, we also have Carolina, New Jersey on. That's an 8 p.m. start on Sportsnet 360, but we want to get to the Sens fines.
Sure.
Because pretty ridiculous.
You ever mess around in warm-up like old Nick Cousins here?
Well, I know that in warm-up we had, like, a lot of people when I played had very specific warm-up routines, and I actually remember I had a college goalie who she would, at the very end of the warmups, she'd stand on the blue line and she'd shoot three pucks into the net from the blue line to the crease. In my very first college game, I'm just skating around and nobody told me about this routine.
Oh, you picked up one of her pucks?
Her name was Whitney. And I was just like, I grabbed one of her pucks and I got absolutely reamed out by her before my first college game. And I was like, I wish I knew. I just grabbed a puck. I'm out there. I'm excited. My family's there. Like, I've never played college NCAA D1 sports. And I took one of her pucks, and I never, ever went near her on the ice again. So people in warmups, especially goalies, are very particular with their process.
Okay.
She was also our backup goalie. Not to, like, throw her under the bus, but she never started the game.
Right. Be easy on Whitney.
Well, I'm just saying, like, it'd be different if she was, hey, they stole ours. Anyway, so
she took a stray there.
She did take a stray. I'll never forget it. Anyway, so obviously there's some shenanigans. I don't know if we have the video of what happened last night, but it is so, like, not important. I think this is nothing. So it's Nick Cousins, if you see on Sportsnet Plus here, Sportsnet 360, shooting a puck at Anthony Stolarz while he stands at the blue line just stretching out. And they've played together. They got a history together. And he got fined $2,083.33, which is the maximum allowable for unsportsmanlike conduct. But the Sens were fined $25,000 for unsportsmanlike conduct for this.
Yeah, it seems a little.
It's nothing.
I mean, I can't, with the video, I can't even really tell. Like, did he flip it into his chest or did he
tossed it at his pads?
Can you tell that from that?
Oh. Different if you like rip it at him.
Yeah, if you rip it at him, that would be a fine. If you flipped it at his chest,
even Whitney
I think
would
that's
be
a
all
fine.
Right with that.
But if you just kind of passed a puck into his skates, that's nothing.
That was
it's
nothing.
If you pass a puck into his skates, it's nothing. We do some Leafs hockey, and I saw after game one or right after the warmups prior to game one that a player, I think it was Thomas Chabot, shot the puck down the ice.
I understand
there's no goalie there and that you're not shooting it at anyone, but it's so harmless. And I think sliding a puck towards Stolarz's
especially
feet
when you
is
know
somewhat
the guy.
Harmless.
It's different if it's, I've never met this goalie in my life. I have no history with them. And
it's just not aggressive.
It's just like whatever.
Not even that.
You all right? You're going to be okay?
I'm okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's no biggie. But anyway, whatever, $25,000.
I guess they're trying to set, like, you just can't do that, but I kind of feel like it happens all the time.
It does happen all the time, and it's truly, I don't know, not a big deal to me, not a big deal, but whatever. The Sens fans are going to eat it up on Twitter.
I will say, if the Leafs, like, as an organization, complained about it, maybe bad karma?
Yeah,
like, why
I know.
Poke the
I
bear?
I hope that wasn't the
why
case.
Why play with fate? Like, you guys are dominating. Stolarz doesn't need distraction.
Yep.
Nick Cousins doesn't need to be further empowered. Yep. Just leave it alone. It's 3-0.
I don't think anybody complained. If somebody did complain.
I think someone did, because who else is going through the Zapruder film to,
I don't know,
to figure out what Nick Cousins did?
It's warm-up gate, and it's ridiculous.
Very silly.
Anyway, this Battle of Ontario, we can get to it at the end of our show. Could end tomorrow night. We will see. We'll take a quick break, though. We're going to talk to Jack Michaels at Sportsnet, our Oilers play-by-play, who's got the game tonight, 10 p.m. It's a must-win category. Let's see how Jack feels about the potential of the Oilers getting back into the series. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Ben Ennis.
And I'm Brent Gunning.
We got you covered on all things Leafs, Raptors, and Blue Jays every weekday morning, 6 to 9.
It's the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Fan Pregame here on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We're getting some pregame news from Eric Engels and co. at the Bell Center. There will be no Patrick Laine in the lineup tonight. It has been called an upper body reason.
Okay. Potentially one of many reasons, but, you know, I think we understand Patrick Laine a little bit banged up. He did not play in the third period last game, partially, I think, because of injury, but partially because he wasn't playing particularly well. So that is a relatively big development. I do wonder how Ivan Demidov's arrival sort of affected all that.
Yeah, he
because
did get punted down.
He was immediately on a fourth line. Yeah, they've been playing together, but it hasn't been working. I mean, there's little resistance on a line that features an incoming Demidov, very young and green at this level, with Alex Newhook and Patrick Laine. So San Luis is going to have to pull a different card here. And Arber Xhekaj is taking warm-ups. I don't know if that means he will be coming in. But a lot of talk about David Savard as well, who did not play much down the stretch for San Luis either. Xhekaj, of course, could probably stand up to guys like Tom Wilson in ways that most guys in the Montreal roster haven't been able to this point.
And no Protas for the Capitals either, who is expected to be close to making a return, but doesn't look to be in the pregame warmups right now as they hit the ice in Montreal. Okay, a couple things. Let's see if we can get a couple things in before we bring Jack on. Leafs Sens, we're just talking about it briefly. The Sens finds one story of it. But tomorrow night, like, the Leafs could win this, crazily enough, in four games. I don't know how it goes, but what are your predictions or your projections to how both teams show up tomorrow night, knowing that one team's season is on the line and the other team's season and unbelievable accomplishment is also on the line?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the Ottawa Senators will be rolling over. Will the fan base roll over? I think that remains to be seen. I think
a lot more blue and white, I think, tomorrow night.
If it was 75% Sens, 80% Sens, I think that number will drop. And that's not, you know, commentary on which fan base is better. It's just, I think, the reality of the situation when you're down 3-0 that, hey, maybe the enthusiasm will drop. But I don't think that's something that will permeate the Ottawa room. I think they're going to be ready for that. If the Leafs do, in fact, win that game, not that it's Florida Carolina from a couple years ago where it's the most competitive sweep of all time, but it would be a competitive sweep. I mean, Ottawa's been in this series, and I feel like they are a touch unlucky to be down.
Well, they 3-0. Could be, they could actually like statistically be up 2-1.
And when you're in that position, yeah, I think you're a little bit unlucky to be down 3-0. I still think it's just that the Maple Leafs have the lead in the series, but 3-0 does seem like on the side, not extreme, but a little fortunate for Toronto. But I think what we're seeing is, you know, there is, you know, this entire time, this Maple Leafs run, it's been about, okay, what does the high end do for you? Mm-hmm. And the high end has given them the advantage in this series, like little plays like what Mitch Marner made and the finish from Austin Matthews. They've been able, with their success on the power play, to have their big guns create the separation in these games and so far in the series. And for that reason, it's a new narrative being written for the Maple Leafs.
What is the most surprising current standing of a first round series for you?
Ooh, that's a good question.
I can give you a few. Wild beating the Golden Knight
2-1. My first instinct was Wild.
Oh, yeah. I think that for me would be the same.
I mean, it's pretty shocking.
We were big on the Wild.
Shocking to see the LA Kings up 2-0 on the Oilers. Mm-hmm. But we knew that was going to be a tightly competitive or a tightly contested series. I think the Wild up 2-1 and in the way that they're doing it, almost running them out of the building, but looking and making Vegas look slow at times with the top line of Kaprizov and Matt Boldy just absolutely bawling out there. I think that's probably the most stunning watch that I've had so far.
Okay, let's shift to our big game on the second part of our doubleheader tonight. LA on the road to face Edmonton back at home there, a 10 p.m. puck drop Eastern on Sportsnet. And let's bring in Jack Michaels, our play-by-play for Oilers, helping us tee it up. Jack, appreciate you coming on. How's the vibes? Let's get a vibe check from you.
Well, Eilish, as you might imagine, you know, if there was a panic meter, it'd be pinned. definitely Oiler Nation feeling a lot of stress coming into tonight's game 3. But I don't think the team is, and here's why. This is a club that, you know, has lost. First of all, it's lost game 1 3 of the 4 times they've played LA. They were also down 2-1 and 3-0 in game 4 in Los Angeles a couple years ago. Rallied to win that game in overtime and beat the Kings in 6. And also, it's even more recently, it's a club that was down 3 separate times to Vancouver, was down 2-1 and 2-0 in game 4 against Dallas in the conference final, and was down 3-0 to Florida in the Stanley Cup final. Now, there's a couple of ways to look at it. I mean, you don't want to be complacent about your ability to come back. But on the other hand, recently, the last 3 years, your legacy, if you will, if this McDavid Drysdale era of Edmonton teams has a legacy, it's they don't sweat it when they're in trouble. And in fact, one of the maybe poorer habits of this team is they seem to play their best after they've put themselves in one heck of a predicament.
In times of need, Jack, they've turned to Calvin Pickard before, and they'll do so again for game 3 at home against the LA Kings. Easy decision after what we saw in LA?
I don't think it's ever easy to turn away from your presumed number one goaltender, but I do think what you point out is it's not the first time. Calvin Pickard was called upon in game 4 of a best of 7 second round series against Vancouver a year ago and delivered with a victory, and may very well have started game 6 had Vancouver not won game 5 in the final minute. So it's not like he played poorly in game 5 either. Then the Oilers went back to Skinner for game 6 down 3-2. And if you'll recall, the last two games of that series, Vancouver got something like a total of 38 shots. I mean, they insulated him. And Stuart Skinner was able to close out the series. Calvin Pickard has also had a heck of a year. I mean, he's 22-10-1. He's had a really good season. His inspired play in March, I mean, memorably on Long Island, when he made that play to Leon Draisaitl in overtime, and Draisaitl skated the length of the ice to, you know, kind of dogpile him. You don't really see that from Leon Draisaitl in terms of such a, you know, demonstrative show of affection. So I think the Oilers are going to play inspired hockey in front of Calvin Pickard, and I believe he's earned it. I mean, here's a guy at the age of 33 that a year and a half ago had no shot at ever playing in the National Hockey League again. He was going to be that guy who split time with the American Hockey League prospect and groomed him to eventually go to the NHL. That's where he was. He was the number 4 goalie in the system, and he has worked his way into a position of prominence on a very good hockey club.
So So we know a goaltender change for the Oilers, but anything else like lineup-wise with the home ice advantage that you think that they could facilitate tonight to try to give themselves a bit of an edge?
Well, I think a couple things, and we saw one of those in game two. I think you're going to see Connor McDavid at times on the penalty kill, just to give LA's 5-4 group something to think about. I mean, they're 5-for-10. They're in a comfort zone right now. They're wheeling it around. They're feeling it with Andre Kuzmenko. Their power play was the absolute pits of the world before Kuzmenko was acquired at the trade deadline. For a playoff caliber club, they still finished 27th in the league on the power play. So, and that was with Kuzmenko lifting them to 24-25% over the final month. So he's made a massive difference. So you've got to give them something to think about. I think you'll see McDavid on the PK. I also think you'll see some reversion to what we've seen from Edmonton when it gets tight. Yes, you'll see McDavid and Draisaitl together, but I also think they desperately need Ryan Nugent-Hopkins and Zach Hyman to get going. And that's why I think Nugent-Hopkins and Hyman at times tonight will play five-on-five hockey with Connor McDavid in the middle. So you'll see some flip-flopping there between Nugent-Hopkins going from, you know, left wing on the first line to center on the second line back and forth. I think you'll see both of those develop. And Edmonton, you know, if they can, you know, I don't think the Oilers – look, the Kings have been solid. They've played real solid on the back end, but they're also, like Edmonton, playing essentially four defensemen. And I think over the long haul, Edmonton is going to take a matchup that has Connor McDavid going one-on-one with Joel Edmondson more often than not, just because of the speed factor. Edmondson, no question about it, has offered much-needed meanness to that back end. He brings grit, a veteran presence. He's played in a Stanley Cup final, but like most stay-at-home, gritty, mean defensemen, he's not going to match up well with Connor McDavid's speed over and over and over again. Controlling the home ice absolutely means something in this series. It's meant a lot more in the Stanley Cup playoffs this year than it has the last couple of years when the road team has been about 500. This year, not so much. I think the home team is 14-6, and the Kings, remember, they're great at home. They have the best record in the league at home, best record in the history of the franchise at home. But in the West, there's one team among the eight in the playoffs that was under 500 on the road, and that was the LA Kings.
Our Oilers play-by-play man, Jack Michaels, on the line with us. You mentioned Kuzmenko and leveling up the power play. We've seen these two teams go at it the last 4 years now, and it felt like the Kings weren't on the Oilers' level for the most part. This year feels a little bit different. I'm not sure exactly how they've leveled up. Power play is one thing, maybe a little bit more talented on the back end, maybe a healthier Drew Doughty, but how else are you seeing a better Kings team this year?
Well, first of all, they've got a better goaltender. I mean, far and away a better goaltender. I mean, I liked Cam Talbot. I had a front row seat when Cam Talbot won a club record 42 games for Edmonton and carried them into the playoffs in 2017. In fact, Connor McDavid won the MVP that year, the league MVP. And I would have argued Cam Talbot might have been the team MVP. But having said that, when you're talking about Jonathan Quick in his final year as a starter in LA, Jonas Korpisalo, David Rittich, Cam Talbot, Darcy Kemper's a mammoth upgrade. A guy who's won a Stanley Cup, to be sure, but also a guy who, outside of Connor Hellebuck, probably had the best numbers across the board in the entire league this year. I mean, he was top three in everything. Goals against, save percentage, shutouts. Remember, he was removed from a shutout of Edmonton with 9 minutes to go in game 80 just because the Kings didn't want to take a chance on him getting hurt. I mean, he was fantastic. So that's the number one upgrade. Number two, moving Quentin Byfield to center and then acquiring Kuzmenko to play alongside Kopitar and Kempe. That's been massive. Warren Fogle coming over from Edmonton to Los Angeles and having another career year. So your top nine now for LA is so solid. You've got Deneau in a two-way matchup with either McDavid or Draisaitl, whichever way you slice it. Typically, they like Deneau against McDavid. Then you've got Quinton Byfield emerging as a two-way presence with Kevin Fiala, who had a 35 goals, another kind of career year for him goal scoring wise, and Alex Laferriere, who had a breakout season. And then up top, you've now added Kuzmenko, who we know can score and now has the reverence for his line mate Andrei Kopitar, where he's doing things on the defensive side of the puck that have surprised even his head coach. So balance, the top nine has never been better for LA, and a huge upgrade in goal with Darcy Kemp.
I'm paraphrasing, Jack, but the lead in to this series was a McDavid scrum where he said, hey, we're not hurt. Oh, that's not a problem. But Evander Kane, hasn't played 10 months or so, and looks like, a guy who hadn't played in his first game in 10 months, given that it's a real fast game out there and it's hard to get up to speed quickly. Trent Frederick may be dealing with a similar thing where he just doesn't look like he has the same pop in his stride. Now, everybody else other than Matthias Ekholm might be feeling good, but I don't want to say that was lip service or that was to lead us astray, but does this team look spry to you? Does it look like it did when they were on their run last year? Don't want to argue with McDavid and the status of his team because he knows far better than me, but I look at a team that I don't know if it does have the same energy level at the very least that the Kings have.
Well, for 40 minutes in game one, they didn't. I mean, I don't think there's any question about that the Oilers did not start on time, just as they did not start on time after the Four Nations faceoff, just as they did not start on time this season when they began the year with an 0-3 record and a 6-0 loss in their season opener on home ice to Winnipeg. I mean, they didn't start on time. Now, the last four periods, I would submit to you that 5-on-5, they've been fine. I mean, they have found their game. They've been better. They haven't surpassed LA, but they've played them even. This series right now is purely from a special teams perspective. Last year, when Edmonton wiped out LA in five games, the Oilers outscored the Kings 9-0 on the power play. This year, the goal differential in the series is 12 for LA and 7 for Edmonton. The goal differential on special teams is 5-0 for LA and nothing, And so, in other words, you've got no real difference 5-on-5, but the difference in the series has been on the special teams. I think if Edmonton cleans that up, we're going to have what everyone predicted, which is a long series. And all that the Kings have done thus far is hold serve at home. Now, they've done so impressively. They shrugged off a meltdown in the third period in game one and got a clutch goal in the final minute. And then when Edmonton recovered from 3-0 down and put pressure on the Kings, trimming it to 3-2 in the third period, LA got back on its toes, went to work, and put the game away with 3 goals in 4.5 minutes. So the Kings have been impressive. They are better. But, as you know, a playoff series does not begin until the road team wins a hockey game.
It's a good quote. I've heard it a few times this last week.
At some point.
I love it. It's a good reminder for all of our listeners. Last one for you, Jack. We appreciate your time. So, worst case scenario, I'm not usually that person, but let's say this is a 4-game series and that is the end of the postseason for the Oilers. What does an offseason look like? Are we talking big shakeups? Are we talking frustration from maybe the two big paid guys? What could even change?
Or just a steady hand?
Well, I think if it's a 4-game sweep, there'll be a lot of questions raised. Absolutely. I mean, you don't go from one goal from a Stanley Cup championship to nary a playoff win and not raise some deep-seated questions. I'm not saying, it's tar and feather time, but I do think there'll be some significant changes considered, if not in fact enacted. Mm-hmm. I do think whatever happens, there'll be a measured approach. You cannot make something, a snap decision in this situation, especially with 1 year left on the contract of Connor McDavid. You don't want to get in the business of making snap decisions when the most important player in the history of the franchise outside of number 99 is due to come up in free agency in a year's time. So I do think if it's a short series and Edmonton bows out, there will be some change, but measured after some time. There won't be any snap decisions made. But I honestly can tell you this, and this is, a byproduct of probably having the league's oldest team. This is an Edmonton club that's not thinking in any way that this is going to be a short series. They've been here before. And I do still think that LA will come to the crossroads at some point in this series where they're going to have to get through the mental block of having lost to Edmonton three consecutive times. They've done a nice job of withstanding some Edmonton heat in the first two games of this series. Whether they can do it at Rogers Place and go home in complete command of the series, or like you suggest, potentially end it in four, that remains to be seen.
Don't worry, I think they're winning tonight. So I think we're back. If everything's back and feeling good by the next time we chat with you, hopefully, Jack. We appreciate you coming on tonight. Enjoy the game and hopefully a long series ahead.
Pleasure, guys. Yeah. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks so much. That's Jack Michaels, Oilers play-by-play here at Sportsnet. And we've got a 10 p.m. puck drop Eastern as the LA Kings look to go up 3-0, only one other series at 3-0. And that is the Maple Leafs and the Ottawa Senators.
Yeah, what that Philip Deneau 6-5 goal did for the Kings, I don't think is measurable. Because I think Jack's right. I think there would have been a mental block. The Oilers just stormed back and tied a game you were in complete control of. And before you could actually let that sink in and have to mentally digest what happened, Philip Deneau scores a goal and you're back in front. So if that doesn't happen and they have to fester over an intermission, the Oilers win that game. I would have bet on it probably at that point. And then what happens to in game two? Are they feeling as good about themselves as they clearly did? Like this game or this series turned in a very sharp direction, it felt, on that Deneau goal. And now it's on the Edmonton Oilers to rebound.
Okay, let's do some best bets for tonight and maybe for the weekend before we wrap it up.
Let's do it.
I'm going desperation station. I usually go motivation station, but it's a bit more desperate tonight.
Second station.
Yeah, we have a few stations on this roadmap. You don't want to know what's after desperation station. This is almost the end of the railroad.
I can only imagine.
I'm going to parlay Montreal and Edmonton tonight. I think both teams are
250.
I know. Mm. You know why? Because the Oilers are such heavy favorites, 152. Montreal's plus 100. I think both teams will win tonight. I think the Oilers, if you really wanted to get spicy, could win on the puck line. Like, I just think they come out tonight, shot out of a cannon. Just talked about Draisaitl and McDavid. We saw that video of them. They looked like they were dejected beyond belief. This is a huge statement night for both of these teams. And I like them both to come up and go Canada. Second part of that one, I guess. And my final little one for you is a Battle of Ontario finishing.
Exact finish.
Exact is. So right now, Leafs are up 3-0. If you think they're going to finish it off tomorrow night, it's only minus 105. But a part of me thinks the Leafs get a little ahead of themselves. When have they ever had a 3-0 series?
You're calling a Leaf loss?
Whoa, whoa, whoa. When have they ever had a 3-0 series lead? It's hard to remember. Was I born? Not sure. So maybe the Leafs do lose Saturday night, and that's okay. Get the Sens back in there. For the Leafs to win in five games, it's plus 220, which is pretty good value. For them to win in six games, where we're getting a little sketchy here, I don't know if I'd like that, it's plus 750. And the Leafs win in seven games, which at this point, I don't know how I would feel about waiting a couple more days for this, is 12-1. But if you really want to make your friends mad or glad, it's Sens in seven at 15-1.
Which one are you playing? Five? You like the
220? I think I like the five.
Okay.
Yeah, plus 220.
I kind of think they're going to get it done in four.
Me too, but if... Man,
I mean, me too.
Live a little.
Okay.
Look, I think they can win tomorrow night, and they probably will, but I'm giving you some options for other value.
Okay, that's fair. I've had a tough couple game or nights here. Two bad picks yesterday. Nuggets get blown out. Tampa loses 2-0. I'm a little gun-shy when it comes to these single-game picks, feeling good about, like, series and futures and stuff like that, but I don't know if I have a good clear view of the board, but I like the Pacers, and the Pacers are getting 5.5 points in game three against Milwaukee with the chance to go up three. They won the first game by 19. They won the second game by 8, and now they're getting 5.5 points. I think they win, but because I'm gun shy, I'll take the Pacers plus 5.5.
Okay. I was waiting for yours to show up on the screen because it looked like Ailish was picking Senators in seven for a minute there.
I'm sure everyone screenshotted
all
that.
Of the photos from the bar
everyone
of me with Senators in seven. That's not what I'm betting.
You're going to have to, well, you did put it on the board.
I'm just providing the numbers for everyone.
Put it on the board. It said Ailish's pick.
I know. It's not my pick.
Several minutes.
I do think it's Leafs in five. So we could have it at home.
NFL draft went last night. Travis Hunter, Jacksonville, moved up to do it. You got about 10 seconds. Good move, bad move?
Crazy move. How about that?
That wasn't one of the options.
I don't know. Call me in 5 years, and I'll let you know.
You'll tune into the London games, I suppose.
That's it. Have a great weekend, everyone. We will see you on Monday.